Yo, how many you giving Caitlin Clark right now, out of shape and having hooped in like a year?
She probably would beat me. She probably would beat me, but it'll be close as fuck. She'll probably beat me 11-9. She'll probably beat me 11-9.
11-9?
Close though. She definitely ain't running away.
Caitlin Clark is beating you 11-9 right now, out of shape.
Yeah, and... she's gonna beat me 11-9.
And you haven't hooped in a year, my nigga.
Huh?
You haven't hooped in a year.
I haven't hooped in more than a year.
Okay, so how many Caitlin Clark giving you? How many points is Caitlin Clark giving you in shape? And you've been hooping for the past month. You feeling good? You got a rhythm.
Wait, what are we? Are we playing in an open gym setting, or are we actually playing in a game?
Open gym.
All right, and I'm her matchup. She's my matchup. We guarding each other.
Oh, y'all going? Yeah, y'all matched up. Whole game.
And where are we going to?
15 twos and threes.
She'll probably have 2, and I'll probably have 6.
Nigga, you clearly have not watched this woman play.
She cold, but she's still a girl.
No way Caitlin Clark in a pickup game is having 2 points.
She cold, but I'm... What? Are you serious? Bruh, I was like, for a basketball player, I would be considered in like the top 90%, like speed, like quickness. Probably like top 90% for sure. I was quick. And
I know you're quick.
I was faster.
I know you're quick, and you're a lefty. You quick.
I could shoot that hoe. Like, I was a really good high school player. I wasn't trash.
Okay, but
so
for second
it's not like this bitch would be like, it's not like I don't know her fucking moves. Like, I know all this bitch's moves.
But for a second, G, think about it. We don't, when we play, we would never pull up cross half court and just pull
up. That's not
true.
That's not true. Well, I got game. I have game footage right now. I have VCR game footage right now, nigga, where I could for sure convert that shit and send you me taking some 27 footers. For sure.
I know, but that's like when you're in a rhythm, and that's also when you're like feeling good, probably. She's pulling that shit.
I was feeling good a lot of the time. Probably half of the time I was feeling good. I'm not going to say I was just
feeling
that.
Were you feeling good when you played Ronjo Rondo that one time?
I was feeling good. You know, I didn't miss a shot that game, but he fucked me up.
All right. You're
comparing one of the greatest point guards of all time. You're comparing one of the greatest point guards of all time to me. Which is fucked up.
I compared him to Caitlin Clark a bit, but it was more of a matchup conversation.
Caitlin Clark is not closer to being Rajon Rondo than I am.
Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying who would give you more buckets. Well, obviously, Rajon Rondo would give you more buckets, but
that's not even close.
All I'm saying is like Caitlin Clark is nothing to play around with.
She is good. I'm not saying she's not good, nigga, but I've played against nigga. I was playing against, this is what, I'm going to give you some context, too, about, like, how good I know these girl basketball players are. When I was growing up, when I was in the sixth grade, nigga, before the WNBA, there was a league called the ABL, and it was the first professional women's pro basketball league, like, in the United States of America. It was the ABL.
I remember.
It was the ABA of, like, the WNBA. It had, like, the better players.
I remember. Yeah.
All right. The best team was called the Columbus Quest. Them niggas was, like, the Chicago Bulls. Them bitches, I think they three-peated.
Hey, you got to stop referring to bitches on here.
Well, I don't know all their names, so they can be bitches.
That's a whole nother conversation on why you refer to that. But...
Anyway, there's three women that's on the team. There's there's like three or four women on the team. Like my aunt was a lesbian, so like she was like their groupie basically. But there was like three or four women on the team she was like really close with. These women came to my family's house for Thanksgiving. One of them was Shannon Pee Wee Johnson, who went on to win two rings with the Minnesota Lynx. She won two WNBA rings. Yeah. Sandra Tate, Katie Smith, who also ended up playing for the Lynx, won two rings.
Lynx. I remember her. She was nice. Edwards,
who also won fucking two rings. I'm Pee Wee in the eighth grade, and I beat her twice. I was in eighth grade. And I beat her twice. I'm just saying.
I know. And we're talking about championships.
One on one, she won three times, I won twice.
I understand what you're saying. Also, if we're talking about WNBA championships, let's not forget about the Houston Comets with the four-peat.
They did four-peat.
Very first four championships in WNBA.
My dad bought those Cheryl Swoops. They look like Chanel shoes or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Those are cold.
Those are super cold.
Those are cold. I think Asia Wilson could try. I think, you know, I don't know who Asia Wilson is, like, fucking with as far as the shoes, but I definitely think it's time for her to get her signature shoe.
Can you get a signature shoe?
Nike, Puma, whoever, if you're out there, Adidas, you all should really be trying to give Asia Wilson her own signature shoe. Sabrina has her own shoe. The fact that I love Sabrina, I think she's very talented, but the fact that Asia ain't got her a two-time WNBA champion, I don't know how many MVPs she's won, but she's been the best player in the league for a while. She does not have her own signature shoe. It's wild. So that needs to be correctified over the off season for Asia. But anyways, welcome to another episode of Made You Look. I'm Josh Pierre. We're back. A lot to talk about, a lot to talk to get into. Well, actually, not a lot. We're not going to be here very long, but we're going to get through a lot of things while we're here.
We in this thing.
Any recent purchases? Anything you eyed? Just give me one item you eyed that you're like, fuck, I really need that. Like, a need that I'm speaking, like, loosely. We don't need anything. We're very blessed. But, like, that you need as a fashion person.
That Saint Laurent leather jacket I keep sending you, I need that jacket.
Yeah, I just recently saw a Yoji Yamamoto leather jacket that I need. I need in my life.
Yeah, I see a jacket that I could never afford, but if I had the money, I would definitely bet be one of the first things I'd get.
Same. I feel that. Well, the play-in has started. It's deep into the tournament for the play-in. They're in the quarterfinals round right now. And we spoke about it over the summer. We gave very in-depth thoughts of how we felt and everything. And now we're in the thick of things. Quarterfinals start tomorrow in Las Vegas. It is between... The semifinals, I'm sorry, is between the Lakers versus the New Orleans Pelicans and the Pacers versus the Bucks. G, what's your feelings and thoughts about the in-season tournament so far?
Pacers versus the Bucks is going to be the Bucks. And then, who'd you say?
Lakers and Pelicans.
Lakers. So it's going to end up being the Lakers and the Bucks. And then the Bucks probably going to win. And then
I think people on social media calling.
Huh?
One more time.
LeBron probably going to be at the tournament. Don't they have a most, huh?
I'm sure they're going to have a tournament MVP. Yeah, I can hear you.
LeBron's probably going to, do they have most outstanding player or MVP at the tournament? I bet you LeBron get it.
I don't know. That's yet to be answered, but I feel like there's going to be a most outstanding player MVP for the tournament for sure.
Yeah, I think LeBron probably going to get it.
But it could be Giannis. Why wouldn't it be Giannis? And if the Pacers go to the finals, it could be. But Haliburton is playing out of his mind right now. He's playing like a top five guard in the league.
He is, but you think he's playing like an MVP though? I just think
when
you start coming of age or whatever in the league.
I'm not saying he might not be MVP level right now, but I definitely think if they had to make votes, he would get votes for MVP.
Yeah, of course. He's hooping.
Haliburton. Transforming
the franchise. I think he's hooping. I don't think he's a legitimate MVP candidate yet. He's gonna have to make a tremendous run in the playoffs.
We're talking the present time for the in season. Let's keep the context clear. We're only talking about in season tournament and at the season right now. We're not talking about like down the line.
If they win, he would be MVP.
I think if the Pacers get to the finals of the in season tournament, he gets MVP. Honestly, even over LeBron.
Yeah, if they don't know, not if they play the Lakers, because it doesn't matter if you're an emerging star. LeBron's 40 and he's the face of the league still, so he's still gonna get the MVP. The fact that he's 40, whatever, 39, he's about to be 39.
Who you got winning though? Who'd you say?
Well, the fact that he would make it to the finals of the tournament lets you know like the level of excellence he's playing at, like his level of consistency is unprecedented at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he played really well last night down the stretch. Austin Reeves hit big shots. Anthony Davis might not have been the most offensive, impactful player, but I think he did come through on the defensive end. I think I love the matchup between the Lakers and Milwaukee as an in-season championship. I love that. That is like quintessential perfect. Yeah, that's giving me finals vibes. You know?
Yeah, that's like classic final vibes.
That's classic final vibe. Final vibes. There is a lot of chatter on social media about Dame winning his first trophy as an in-season tournament trophy. Which is interesting, but I think it's a good look for them.
Just making that conversation, haven't watched NBA basketball, or they haven't won anything. If they played team sports, if they ever played in the team sports setting, that's the equivalent of winning a Maui Invitational or some shit. It's like okay,
but Maui's dope.
That's how early this shit is in the season.
But even winning a Maui Invitational is a dope championship to win. That's one of like the most important. That's like winning the Jimmy B Classic. That's a quintessential college tournament to win. All the top teams in that early in the season. That's like so many national champions. So many national champions came from winning the Maui Invitational. So many champions from the Maui Invitational end up winning national championships. That's a good early indication that you're in a position to championship.
Not lately.
And if that's the equivalency of the in-season NBA tournament, if that's down the line, if that what continues this happens, continually like happens like this with the in-season tournament, it's a success. Like, and I would also qualify the in-season tournament so far as a success.
I think it's a success. I don't think it qualifies who the champion is going to be, because we don't have I don't think the sample, this is the first season, so we don't know who's going to win.
Of course. I mean, with the championship, you got 7 games.
They start off well in the beginning of the season, and then they fall off. I just think the NBA season is too long to have it be an indicator, you know what I'm saying? Because there's a lot of teams that have veterans, so they might just be getting that start late.
The Nuggets had a very long season, bro. Like, they the reigning champions are just gonna look at this like, we want the atmosphere of a playoffs just to kind of get underneath our belts to see where we at. Because, like, I mean, let's not get twisted. Denver has had a couple lineup changes. You know, they lost Bruce. Well, not Bruce. Bruce Brown. They lost Jeff Green. They lost, like, pretty big puzzles of their piece that won a championship. But the fact that they even got a playoff atmosphere during the regular season before the playoffs start is enough for them. I don't think they're going to win. But I think for these young teams like the Pacers, Sacramento, Pelicans, it's really good practice for them. And also I think it's good for the Lakers just from their position of they've just been up and down for the past since they won a championship. And also just giving them just more confidence of a playoff atmosphere, championship atmosphere through the season and seeing where they are, where they are as a team. I mean, time would only tell what the indication means of what the in-season tournament does. But I think it can lead up to something like almost like a Maui situation, college basketball level, where if we see someone win this tournament and they end up winning the championship, now this tournament seems a little bit more important than what it just perceives as. You know, yeah, now people are like, okay.
I get it as a tool to like keep like you know the probably the less informed, knowledgeable person like consumer for NBA basketball to keep them engaged. But I mean, only time will tell. But most of the time in NBA basketball, because the season is so long and the style of play is so much different than college basketball, I feel like they operate under a different timetable in terms of like when they like to peak during the season, you know? Because that's when.
Who? Wait, who? Just the players in general?
Yeah, the players in general. You know what I mean? How they gel as a team. I feel like they understand the longevity of the season. So I think, yeah, while it provides like some kind of incentive for the roster to gel faster, I don't think it's necessarily an indicator of like who's going to peak at that point in the season.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
what
I mean? No, I understand. I understand. I think also to that point, the importance of creating camaraderie in a team, you know, not just the super team and trading, creating like a continuity around a group will be super important because this is happening so early in the season that you kind of got to have to be together. You know, you can't just be like, oh, I'm gonna add these players here and just hope it works out. Like you kind of have to come in the season with some type of chemistry now.
Right. I agree. The fact that they need this center though, is kind of like, that's what makes me feel like, you know, these niggas is entitled as fuck. Like, why would you know what I mean? How much you already getting paid, especially with, like, the amount of younger. Now the league is a younger league because they've had to institute all these, like, you know, new fun and improved, like, ways to engage and be current with, like, what's trending socially and technology, like, technological-wise. It's a younger league. So I just feel like.
And those are the ones they're attracting. Really they're attracting the younger players.
Huh?
They're attracting the younger players with this tournament.
For sure. And I don't know if they think, I don't know if they feel like they should have, I don't know if the NBA should have to like cave or cater or acquiesce to like that. Because I just feel like, I feel like it dilutes the like the elite level of like what NBA basketball is. I understand they're trying to broaden their horizons, make it a worldly league, like actually be world champions. And I feel like it's moving towards that way. But I still feel like there should be, like, a level of, like, all right, this is the professional life. They're trying to make it into pro soccer and, like, pool play, in-season tournament. Like,
yeah,
it's AAU. You know, this is professional basketball.
But why like, not, though? That's fun, though, dog. Come on, man. These games have been super close. They're playing competitive. They're competing. Like, don't you want to see that? Especially for... Even in the regular season, there's not as many blowouts as there was last year. You're seeing star players playing to the end of games, and you're seeing star players hoop. Like, they're playing for something now. And I love that. Like, they're not just playing to play.
Yeah, but I
and
feel like
they were, and they were going to, and before to
play because, like, you didn't need Kobe didn't need that. Like, the All-Star,
now,
you know what I mean? They didn't need that shit. Kobe wasn't like,
I know, oh, but
I'm going to take the game off because we play the fucking, who sucked at the time? The Clippers sucked at the time he played.
I know.
So I'm going to take it off because we just playing the Clippers. Like, who gives a fuck? Or we playing the Magic. Who gives a fuck? It's like, no.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going 70 tonight. Or we playing the Raptors. You know what I mean? Like, the Raptors weren't good that year.
Well, now, like, I mean, we're different. Well, now you're starting to sound like one of them old niggas. Now you're starting to sound like one of them old niggas. Because now you're starting to sound like one of them old niggas because things just changed, bro. Like, we do have to, like, pacify these players now a little bit. You know, we got to incentivize them. It's like, your uncle is, like, coming from Thanksgiving. It's like, oh, I'll give you $20. You get two A's. You know, it's like that type of, like, how you have to feed these players now. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. The NBA is getting crazy money now. More money than they've ever seen. So why not? Fuck it. Like, blow it. Blow the bank. Let's move into some fashion shit though to kind of keep this conversation balanced. So I hit you with one of the topics that I wanted to kind of talk about was this conversation in fashion, because there's been a lot of moving seats and houses, in new people been popping up and Matthew Williams just left Givenchy. We've seen in the past of LVMH moving chairs with their creative directors. I think the topic right now is like so many white men being creative directors for heritage houses. So many white men, you know, being creatively in charge of what's going on in the house. And that's fair. I think my thoughts are, I think a lot of these houses are chasing something that is, you know, they're chasing the whole Virgil Abloh effect. Let's be real. You know, they want those.
They don't like sales. I don't think the consumer. I don't think the purists and all of the pundits. I don't think how they like the attention that it's given it, but I don't think they like the prestige that, from their perspective, it's like diminished from. Because I kind of feel like there's been an air of like trying to separate street culture from luxury again. I feel like subconsciously there's been this initiative to say like, yeah, we want it to be popular. We want it to be like appeal to the masses, but then we also don't want this urban shit.
Yeah, they're trying to keep a balance. They're trying to keep a leash on it. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you want to get those sales, if you want those people, if you want that demographic to buy your clothes or to give you that attention on social media, you know, hire people who look like them into your design group. Hire young.
What are you trying to do though? Because you got
young people who are disenfranchised. Hire them into your design group. You know, like, don't just chase the next wave. You know, take time, research. You know, get with HR, and figure out a plan if you really want these sales. And put them in your design board. Don't just, you know, it's kind of like you see Lanvin and Future collabing together. And it's like, that's not authentic at all. That makes no sense. That's literally you chasing sales. It's almost like an algorithm situation where you're just chasing clicks. And it doesn't seem authentic at all. And people can see that.
At this point, because it's all about finding somebody who understands how to fingerpick and present like diversity opportunities in a way that's like comfortable for the chair, the board. You know what I'm saying? And that's like mm-hmm. that's why I think you see all of these like pasteurized type of decisions since the passing of Virgil. Because if that wasn't the case, we just saw Designer of the Year got awarded to Martine Rose, and she still hasn't had an offer at any of the major houses to be a creative designer.
I think so she's declining.
Some kind of indication of like, all right, the culture kind of acknowledges that this person not only is like culturally knowledgeable
about the
trends, but she's also like a person of the culture.
It's the culture acknowledging and the
time too.
It's like anything else. The you know, executives and stuff like that are gonna catch on later. Like the culture's already acknowledged Martine Rose, and let's even also say Wells Bonner has been the best, and also Baudet, which is also very interesting. Also another point to make, I think, is very interesting. There's a contrast in the conversation of like, I think this is a side conversation, side snippet, but the conversation of only white men being head of heritage houses. But you also have this wave in menswear of the top menswear designers are women. Martine Rose, Wells Bonner, Emily Bode, Simone, I might fuck up her name, Simone Roche from London right now just had her own menswear line just previewed or just released. So you're seeing, you know, even though these men are taking over heritage houses, you're seeing these women take over this menswear emerging market, like in a chokehold. And I think that juxtaposition is so interesting to me. Like, I think it's a bit serendipitous about it. And that was kind of like maybe the dialogue that I was trying to get to. Because I can go on and on about the whole heritage thing and the way white men are holding down the heritage houses. Like, that's expected. Like, that's historically been the story. And I don't think it's going to change. I don't think it's, like, you know, for listeners who don't know the timeline, Sarah Burton from Alexander McQueen left Alexander McQueen. So after she left, that's when it's no more women in heritage houses. From Dior, well, actually... Dior is still creative director by a woman. But outside of Dior, there is no other woman ahead of a major heritage luxury house. And when we say heritage houses, we're talking about Dior, Givenchy, Louis Vuitton. I guess Prada is a heritage house, but it's still shared now with Raf Simons, even though Miuccia is still there. We're talking about those levels. Haute couture based also is part of that involvement. But I think it is interesting in the menswear realm where all the women are taking over, while maybe a more declining business in this whole heritage house womenswear is not as where it should be positioned at. And menswear is coming up.
Well, I think androgyny and fluidity is something that has always existed in the realm of fashion. I think just like in the 80s, how I think it leaned more towards feminine silhouettes, feminine themes, feminine it's just more feminine in the 80s. And I think now with, like, you know, the emergence of, like, the Y2K style with the Gen Zers, I think that the masculine sensibilities and design language has been more prevalent in the fashion now. And I think women, more so than ever, have kind of taken that and implemented it into, like, what their style is. So,
and also men are also open
understanding, the menswear and what the offerings are, like the possibilities are now. You know what I'm saying? Their take on it is just different because now, I mean, I feel like women have always worn masculine stuff, but I don't think it's ever hit the runway more than it has, like, I think in these past, especially on the emergence of, like, maybe, like, 2020, when, like, you know, baggy came back, I think women have now found a place for it in the runway, in couture, and hot couture, so I think that's, you can attribute that to their offerings, too. I think their interpretations are more relevant now in menswear.
And I think the audience amongst men are more open to wear a lot more broader of textures of clothing, like, you know, with lace, you know, ruffles, the bell bottoms. You know, I think women, you know, in their interpretation of how they see men in their eyes, they're cultivating it, they're molding it. And I also think the audience of men are more open to wear these different type of textures and these different type of looks with, like, you know, blouses and silks and similar textures that you see in women's wear, men are much more open to wear now. Almost kind of like reverting back to like Victorian days.
That's how it feels like to me.
Not even the 80s, bro. Even like Victorian days. Like, come on, bro. Like, even around like the 1600s, motherfuckers were wearing heels. You know, even like a dandy look in like 1600s, men were wearing similar, like, textures of women, you know, lace and these silks and crochets and these type of elaborate materials. Men are much more open to wear these things now more than ever. Openly.
I agree. I don't know. In the 80s, them niggas was freaky. Like, them niggas was freaky.
They were. This is true. I mean, even in the 70s, it was pretty freaky too.
Yeah, it was freaky.
I mean, if you look at, you know who wore some freaky ass shit was Sly. Sly, you know, Sly from the Family Stone.
People, Rick James was crazy with it. Obviously, Prince was insane. All those niggas made all of that. Yeah, they made all that like electro funk. Freaky ass niggas, dog.
We'll create a music podcast if this pops off, but we're gonna keep it within the style of basketball. But I think the whole conversation with the white men in heritage houses only is to the houses. If you all are really chasing these type of sales that you want amongst a demographic that you're trying to chase, maybe put some of these people in those positions to actually just design the clothes. You know, don't just chase something that like is just for clicks and for sales. Put people from these groups in these houses so they can make the clothes that you're trying to get to make these sales. It's not a one quick way fix. It's a longevity situation. And even though you're trying to get things out of a group of people that you don't understand, that you've never been around, you give them opportunities to at least share their vision and test out like how they can actually create for the masses, and you could probably make some sales. And if you're in a designer, if you're in school and similar, like, I mean, a lot of black designers have to just start their own lines because they don't get hired from these houses. Like, let's be real. The result of some of these, the result of Martine Rose and Wells Bonner and Bianca Sanders and the guys that bought, or the couple that bought.
I mean, that's what Off-White was.
I mean, they had to, that's the result. Like, the reason why they're popping off is because these houses didn't hire them. So you start your own line. And some of them probably started their own line just for portfolio reasons, just to get in the door. And then something pops off. You know, but that's the only message I got. And that was the caveat why I want to touch on that topic. But you have any closing words for that?
Probably my craziest new cop that I got. I'm actually wearing it right now. It's a kimono. It's a kimono. My dog is crazy. It's a kimono from this company, Japanese company called From Miu. And it's a reconstructed military. It was a military shirt, and they reconstructed it into a kimono. So they took off the
collar. I like the beading on the bedazzle.
Yeah, there's some like stud details. It's a smiley face. It's a star. It's also hand painted. A little like just couplets of like chili peppers and some kind of cloud. I don't know what that is. And then the cross, a diamond. It's just really, it's a bird, hand-painted bird on here. Peace on. I think it's a really super dope piece that I copped.
Shout out the brand.
Yeah, From Miu. FRMUU, Japanese designer. I think they've just been making stuff since the early 2000s. But great design.
Whoa.
I really love this.
I like it. I saw when he was hopping on the video. I was like, that's a dope little kimono situation.
Man. Yeah. So shout out this brand. It's amazing. So if you got the chance to check them out, make sure you save up some coin because it is not for the light of pocket. I can tell you that. Yeah. Shout that brand out, but man. Y'all need
to get it. That's good to know. Well, the people got one item that you're wearing tonight. Moving on back to basketball. There's been a lot of other stuff going on around the
NBA. What's the wild moment in the NBA? What's the wildest moment? Because there's been some, to your credit, you acknowledge that there's been a little bit more competitive this year and that, we have had, some fiery tension between teams. I think there's some new rivalries that have ensued.
I think the NCAA tournament is going to like reignite some new rivalries and also create some new rivalries. But
that's quite possible.
I think we could just talk about some veterans. I think, you know, we're a little bit late on this, but one veteran that's been always in conversation is Draymond Green, somebody that we have not touched on in this podcast, surprisingly. I'm actually Draymond very happy Black. It took us what, episode like Draymond 6 Black. To talk about Draymond Green. What? Wait, say it again?
I call him Draymond Black because he's black as fuck. I mean, I just feel like he's a tough, he's a bully amongst a bunch of kids who don't know how to fight. I think we'll see.
Does Draymond know how to fight?
When somebody checks his ass, I don't think nobody really is trying to play that role against him. Maybe other than Dylan Brooks, but you know how niggas are from Canada, like
No, I don't know.
They're really not actually. Let's put it that way.
Dylan Brooks might be the meanest guy from Canada.
He's the meanest person from Canada. And he's light skinned, so that should tell you something.
That says a lot.
That says a lot about, the niggas from Canada.
I can't talk too much about him anymore because he's with the squad I root for. So I can't really get my true thoughts. I support Dylan Brooks now, though.
I support him, but it is what it is, bro.
I just need Draymond to understand his. He's not who he was. And he was never that guy.
We're never who he thought. Who you thought you were, nigga. I don't know who you thought you were. You're not that guy now. Somebody will knock you the fuck out. It's just got to be somebody who ain't scared. Somebody who ain't scared.
I don't even think they're scared.
He did not knock you the fuck out.
I don't think anyone's scared. I think everyone is just like exhausted from all his antics.
Huh?
I don't think like Anthony Edwards is scared. Like when he bumped Anthony Edwards, he came back and gave Warriors what, a 40 ball that one time? Like that's the best answer you can do to someone like that. It's like, you have whatever you want to have right now, but come back and bust his ass and get a dub, that's how you shut him the fuck up.
Yeah, but you also elbow him in the face. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, the brand of NBA
basketball,
it needs to go back.
But you have your other... No, you have, like, the Bill and
Beer. Basketball, dog. Like, when tempers flare, like, niggas be fighting each other. Like, I ain't never seen... I've never seen grown men play basketball and it's been less fights than I have in the NBA in the last maybe 7 years. Maybe 6 years. Maybe I'll give it 5-6 years. 5-6 years has been like a soft brand professional basketball.
You know that
there's been fights at every level of basketball except the NBA now.
What's that text you sent me about
LeBron and his fight? We can get into that. Let's talk about, like, the fact that, you know, wildest moments, Draymond choking somebody out.
Pause.
Yeah, I don't think that was that bad, but you know what I thought was really disappointing was that Ime Udoka and that LeBron situation kind of let me know about how tough LeBron is, really. Because if you think about all the greats that we consider greats in basketball, they've all... A, swung on somebody, or they've been swung and connected on. You think about this. Think about every great that you've ever seen play basketball. Anybody we consider greats, they all have a video, a clip of them either getting they shit caved in, somebody punching them in the motherfucking jaw, or they hitting somebody else in their jaw. Everybody. Think about everybody. All of the greats. Except for LeBron James. And that kind of indicates to me either you're a really nice guy too, or you're just playing up on somebody who ain't willing to punch you in your motherfucking jaw. Nigga swung on Kobe and knocked his motherfucking jaw back. You saw
Chris Childs ran. Chris Childs ran up on Kobe. That's
crazy. Julius Irving socked Larry Bird in his motherfucking shit.
In the fucking jaw.
Hakeem Olajuwon socked somebody in that shit. Shaq,
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the one of the most peaceful Charles people Martin, on earth.
He touched your friend in the face, dog.
Yeah. Even Kareem fought with Larry Bird.
He broke his face, dog. He almost got kicked
Is there any video of Clyde Drexler? Is there any, but you know what, great, I don't think Clyde Drexler has ever been caught on court fighting someone, though.
Yeah, but he ain't in the top 20. Like, we talk about niggas who's like, the greats. We talk about the greats.
Bro, Magic Johnson, he's top 50. Clyde Drexler's top 50. Isaiah Thomas
was definitely punching niggas in their shit. He punched Michael Jordan.
Not on court.
Isaiah Thomas was socking niggas in the face, dog.
He was. I mean, he would.
Except for LeBron. And I think that's why you can't be a GOAT, because you ain't never swung on nobody. And nobody swung on you. So, I love LeBron. I'm probably one of the first people in the United States, in the world, that's ever seen him play before. He's a great to me. He's 1,000% the best nigga I've ever played on a basketball court with. And I played with him. I played against him in the 7th grade. So, ain't shit you can tell me about knowing about greatness, nigga. I played with greatness in the 7th grade.
First example you can hear about if you ever played with a professional athlete in 7th grade, it gives you full leverage to say you are an expert or someone you could speak about professional athletics.
Oh, yeah, I can speak about There it is. I know
Kyle G played with LeBron in 7th grade, and now he's giving all his examples on why he can give him the GOAT crown or not.
Yeah, that shit was obvious in 7th grade. I saw that. I was like, yeah.
But the fact that he don't throw hands is also making him say he ain't a GOAT.
He never threw hands, though. I remember very little about his demeanor because it seemed like he was unbothered. That's what it seemed like. It seemed like he was just there. Just clocking in. It didn't seem like he was trying to destroy us. It just seemed like he was just in his normal element. Whereas there's other players.
Because he probably saw you niggas and was just like, I don't have to do that much. We gonna get the dub. I just gotta do the bare minimum to get the win.
Yeah, but the other players that I've seen that like are for ferocious. Like, the killers, like, they scared me. So I could see, like when they, I've never played against Michael Jordan or Kobe, but seeing them, like, understanding, like, killer, like, people who strike fear into you, and how distinguishing that quality is as a basketball player, I can only imagine how intense it was playing against them. Because seeing how good LeBron was, if he was mean like that, that would probably have maybe questioned even wanting to play basketball anymore. You know what I'm saying? If he didn't have that mean dude demeanor, like he was like really trying to intimidate his contemporaries, he probably would have been better than Michael Jordan. Because the ability was there.
The
ability wasn't really there physically. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't as physically imposing. I think skill-wise and mentality and approach-wise, he was there. I don't think his ability was there. LeBron's ability is, like, here with Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? He's only looking at the age of 40 to actually improve his game.
Wait, who?
Well, how many 40-year-olds you know that still haven't peaked? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I mean, even at 40, LeBron, I mean, Mike would have swung on the Wizards on somebody.
Hey, I think Mike's body broke down, though, because I don't think he took as good a care of his body as LeBron did.
Well, obviously, but LeBron ain't 40 yet. He's 38.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan ain't doing this shit. Michael Jordan wasn't doing this at 48 or 38. He was
on the Wizards at 40.
But he only averaged 22.
Only averaged 22 in fucking NBA at 40 years old. That is
LeBron's averaging 30.
Nigga, still, he's 38. We'll see what happens in two more years. That's a lot of time. It ain't a lot of time, but that's also a lot of time. And also LeBron, also Michael was coming off of not hooping for 6 years. LeBron's been hooping consistently. The fact that Michael just hopped up off the couch was like, oh, I'm going to come back to the league. First year, average adult. Second year, average 22.
A consistently hooping for an extra 6 years would have some kind of impact on his durability, like his decline. You know what I'm saying? Like, hooping consistently,
I know what you're saying.
Wear and tear on your
it's two different monsters, because I think it's definitely two different monsters, because one, yes, consistently playing is a wear and tear and is very salute. But also hopping off and getting off the couch and deciding to play an NBA game for 82 games and two seasons, don't miss a game out of all those games, is also very impressive.
I think that's a mentality thing too, because I think Michael Jordan was such a competitor. It was like every game, no matter who the opponent was and how good or bad they were, there was some kind of like, there was something he was holding on to be like, nah, fuck that. He's like, his knee was fucked up. He's like, nah, fuck that. Nah, they said we ain't gonna make it to the playoffs. This nigga looked at my girl crazy. This nigga blew, he, you know what I'm saying? He dusted his shit off in my face and I inhaled it. That nigga was trying to choke me. Anything. He's a psycho. I'll give y'all a quick story about Michael Jordan, how crazy Michael Jordan is. I'll tell you, when I lived in Chicago, I had a job working for Brand Jordan, and my boss was one of Michael Jordan's best friends, Reggie Saunders. Most people who are a celebrity who wear Jordans, Reggie Saunders sent you your Jordans. He is the reason DJ Khaled has a Jordan contract. He's the reason Wale got a Jordan contract.
Wait, who?
Saunders is an important man.
No. Why you say Wale?
Huh?
You say Wale? Did you say Wale? Wale had a Jordan contract?
Yeah. Reggie Saunders is one of the most important people.
Wale had a Jordan contract?
Yeah, Wale had a Jordan. He had a Jordan sponsorship. He had a Jordan campaign for a while. The reason being is because, I'll give you some backstory, Reggie Saunders is from Silver Springs, Maryland. He's one of the first people who was on the Wale's music, right? That just kind of gives you
all right, that makes sense.
Like, yeah, how how nepotism works.
That makes a lot of sense now. That makes a lot of sense now.
This is my point. Reggie Saunders gave us, as like this pilot program, the opportunity to kind of like get a peek behind the curtain with the inner workings of like Jordan Brand and development and all of that shit. I say that to say he told us a story about he was a professional. He was trying to ride professionally, like triathlon and shit, like Tour de France type shit, like ride far, you know, ride them speed bikes and shit. So he,
yeah. 4 or 5 days on a bike and
Jordan, all their wives, they all took a trip out to Hawaii, and during their trip, Reggie and Howard White flew their professional bikes out there. They was going on some crazy trail, 110 miles, something like that, right? Something crazy. Michael Jordan gets wind of them planning this excursion that they plan to go through the mountains in Hawaii and ride these bikes. He goes on a limb. Oh, y'all ride 96 miles? Oh, shit. If y'all can do it, I can do it. Orders a bike to get overnighted to Hawaii to ride with them in the morning. Keep in mind, this dude is in his 40s, has never rode like these kind of bikes ever. They're like, all right, well, we're going at 4 in the morning. He's like, all right, I'll be there, whatever. Comes at 4 in the morning, has like a fucking, those long-ass Jordan shorts that he's always wearing. These other niggas got their like bike on.
Wait, not denim, not denim Jordan shorts. The denim Jordan shorts?
I don't know. I think it was like some basketball shorts. But the shorts was like, well, you know, they was Jordan long.
Oh, to his shins. It was to his shins.
Basketball Jordans on, basketball shoes.
This nigga gonna go loop on a bike.
What, I think it's like 90, it's like 196 or 108. It was some weird off number. Ride 96 miles with them, and almost, they said he almost killed himself just to prove that if they could do it, he could do it. So that gives you an kind of indication of like kind of hop off the couch mentality that Michael Jordan probably exhibited that season. That's the different kind of like crazy kind of nigga that is, though. It's like, it's anything. It's like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's everything, but also anything. Psycho.
Well, he's definitely psycho. He has a different type of killer instinct.
That's what I mean.
It's definitely.
Which is niggas that don't swing on nobody from somebody who is maniacal like that. That's what I'm bringing my point home to. Is that
LeBron, I was like, bring it back in about why LeBron don't swing on nobody.
And that's from why this LeBron would never be a great. Because he won't fucking swing. Get off the couch and swing on somebody, nigga. Swing on somebody. That would have solidified me as a GOAT. If he would have slapped the shit out of Ime Udoka, like, shut the bitch ass up. Popped him in the mouth. I'd have been like, all right, well.
Mike, he's officially the GOAT.
I know you got 6 rings, but you ain't never slapped the shit out of nobody's coach and gone to win the game. Fuck out my face, that nigga.
And the coach get ejected. And the coach get ejected, and you get to still stay in.
If you smack the nigga, you still stay in.
That's crazy.
Or if you push him back in the seat. Ooh, what if he just muffed the nigga like this? He just muffed his ass like this. And muffed his ass. And he like, he slapped the bench got to hold him up. Like, whoa.
None of that shit happened. I mean, there is recording of what was said. There is recording of what was said.
And like, I don't like the bitch word, dog.
There is wind of what was actually said, and I think, you know, we take a moment for people to kind of listen. They can figure out what was said. And what was said, it was a conversation amongst two individuals in pleasantries that was exchanged, and it went left for Ime because he had to go to the showers, and LeBron continued on a scoring spree. Yeah, my Rockets lost, but you know, I like the direction that we're going into. I like the new cloth that's being threaded. You know, this new cultural shift. We need that type of emotion. So I'm not gonna get too much deeper in about the Rockets right now. We're this is a very unbiased show. But you know, let's for the last topic before we kind of conclude this, let's talk about one of our favorite players in the league in their situation.
Oh, the pool boy, my pool boy, pool guy, yes, me.
Well, that wasn't our. It was Kuzma as our favorite player, but Pool just happened to be there to kind of lend a hand about. We like Pool. We just don't really like how he's respecting the game. Like, let's be honest, he's not respecting the game.
Nah, he need to get demoted to the G League. You know, honestly, I was thinking about this. We were talking about the topics, and I kind of feel like that's what should have happened to him and Ja Morant. They both should be in the G League.
Because you think part of a punishment in the NBA is like if you do something wrong or you just don't respect the game?
Yeah, you should play in the G League. Yeah, you should. You should because you need to kind of feel like some redemption. Like you need to feel some
that's real
some redemption. So they shouldn't have they should have made Ja play in the G League. That's what they should have did. He should have had to play in the summer league or the G League or some kind of shit.
Yeah. I mean, he would have given them 50, but I mean,
everybody wins. You know why? Because he learned his lesson because they embarrassed him. But the fans that don't always get to see him get an opportunity to go see him play, and he puts on a stellar performance. So everybody wins.
Gee, that is an amazing option for a consolation of punishment.
That's what they should have did instead of having.
And he also has to do the same travel on the bus.
Travel with him. Go sign autographs. Do fucking press.
Same shit.
I think that is that shit in the G League.
Tell them your views of like.
Take your ass to the G League. Get your shit together, cause this is your warning. We're gonna embarrass you before we kick your bitch ass out the league. Go play with the kid. Go play in the sand. Go sit at the little kid table. That's when you at Thanksgiving and you say some shit. Your aunt did what you say, like, you know. Auntie, why you pregnant again? You ain't even married. Go to the kids. Go to the pregnant again.
Why is that hair between your eyebrows?
Your boyfriend?
I ain't never seen women got hair between their eyebrows. Why you got that Anthony Davis look? Go to the kids table.
Go shit your ass over there with.
You fucking 18 years old. You asking silly shit like that. You're like, no, go back over.
Yeah, go back over and sit with them. Because you don't know how to mind grown folks' business. It's a privilege we even let you sit at this motherfucker. And that's how they should treat Jordan Poole and low-key Kuzma, too. Kuzma need to be in the G League. Fuck, don't go to China. Because China, you can disappear. We can't ever see you play. In the G League, we can see. We can still comment on you. You can feel that. You can feel that heat. You know what I mean? So I could be like, I gotta get out of here. This is not comfortable.
I think that's a really good constellation. I think if both sides win, the fans win. I think they still get to play. They still get to be like in the league, but they get demoted. I think you also told me off this.
And shit. Yeah, go mingle with, you know, the people who don't really have an opportunity to go see NBA product on that level and be accessible to the people. Like, you know what I mean? I think it would definitely it's a humbling experience for them too, because the amenities aren't there.
Yeah, I think that's a good option. I think that would be really beneficial for the league, for G League. I think it will probably put them in a mindset like, hey, it's a privilege to be on this stage. It's a privilege to like play this game on this level, and I should take it for granted.
Right, and you should be you ain't supposed to. You can't miss no practices. You got to make all the media days. Like,
and you can't just be bullshitting on the court. Like, come on, bro. Like, this ain't N1 mixtape. You can't just go dribble to your leg to the box. Come back, cross over, throw up a three, air ball. Come on, bro. Like, you can't. Yeah, you're playing the game with, like, the type of lackadaisical, no intensity. No one's paying good money to watch you disrespect the game. And I think that's like one thing we have to come across on this pod is that like whoever plays the game, respect the game. You know, even respect fashion as a whole. Respect the whole like ecosystem of how things are being operated and ran. And just because of what you see visibly is that it takes a lot of work to get to that point. And it takes a lot of people to get to this point of what you see, what people see that is visible. So like, respect this whole thing that we're doing. Respect the game, respect style and fashion and that whole ecosystem. And I think that's like one thing we want to get across. And from this topic of like Kuz and Poole, what we're seeing, and I think what everyone is seeing is like, there's just no like level of care for the game. And that's what's sad, because we know what he's capable of doing. We know that Kuz is capable of being an all-star caliber player, and they're just playing it like, oh, we can do it whatever we want because we can. And that's rude. And no one likes to see that. And that's not authentic at all.
Yeah, I really don't agree with him walking away from the huddle and trying to be disengaged when the coach is trying to draw plays and stuff. That just doesn't, to me, indicate somebody who's headed in the right direction, because if you think about it, like, yeah, you get more money, but like you're in a different culture and you came from a championship culture. So the organization is looking upon you to kind of feel obligated to step in and fill that role and bring in that kind of winning culture and the things you learned from the last deal you got. Not to become some prima donna who's, you know, self-righteous and not engaging and trying to like build some camaraderie and like exemplify themselves as a, you know, somebody leading the team. That's just not what basketball is about.
It's not. We don't like it. They need to go. But you remember that that movie Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg, and she had to take her back to like street basketball to give them that. And tried to take them back to street basketball to gotta give them that like that flavor and that like passion about the game. It feels like that needs to happen with Kuzma and Poole. They need to go back to like where they had fun about the game and retrieve that type of energy and come back. Like they needed like a moment, like you said. Like,
go ahead.
No, that's all I was saying. That was it.
Yeah, I just don't like that. They're not being purists about the game. Like you ain't playing the competition, the camaraderie, like the you know, it's a sport of competition. It's like who could display their skills better and win. You know?
They collecting the check.
Like hooping, you get off, you could, you know, get in your bag, but like, you know, basketball just personifies like teamwork in such a way like that no other sport can. It's more poetic than any other sport, I think, just because of the way, you know, it could be inspiring, but it could also be like, you know, emotionally evoking. Like there's parody in it, like it's dramatic, like, you know what I'm saying? There's all those things that it encompasses the game, but you got to do it, you got to approach it the right way for it to be like, for those things to be personified. And I don't think he's like passionate about it.
Either one of them are. You know what's so funny? Both of them do have championships. So I think both of them kind of feel like, well, we have our championships, so we can just kind of do what we want. You know, like we're in this position. We both cut big checks, and we have a championship. So
what else? Once you reach a certain level of status, it's almost like being stamped or verified on Instagram. Well, it used to be how being stamped and verified was on Instagram. It's like, I'm not an imposter. Like, I'm a winner. I come from championship pedigree. You're supposed to carry yourself like that, because now that's like Andre Iguodala. Like, people lean on him, even though he doesn't have a significant role anymore. For
he just retired.
He just retired.
Yeah, recently.
All right, well, you know, people leaned on him for that. And it was because of, like, the professionalism, like, that he carried even beyond playing with the Warriors. And I think that shit is important in the league. And they need to carry on that.
Well, that's what keeps you in the league. And that's why people will trust you if you kind of keep that pedigree going. And I think that's what they were looking for from both of these players. Like, you know, these guys both won championships. So bring that energy to this franchise here to build so you get another one. But it could be a generational thing. I just don't see them looking at themselves in that type of manner to kind of lead a team. And I think they're both getting, like, very in-your-face experiences on how hard it is to be that guy on a team to lead, even to the playoffs, how difficult it is.
Yeah, you gotta be locked into this shit. This shit gotta consume your life. I don't think people realize, like, Kyrie, I'm not really a Kyrie fan, but when he said that quote about the level of, like, attention to detail and, like, greatness that it takes, like, you don't just stumble into, like, being as great as he is. I really feel like he did justice to, like, the difference between, like, talent and, like, work ethic and then, like, the combination of both. He was exemplifying, like, yeah, I am talented, but, like, I worked hard as fuck. Like, y'all don't realize how much work I put into being as good. Like, I'm obsessive about this shit. Whoa. You know what I'm saying? People are probably misled because he looks so casual and he's such, like, all you really see about him, like, being passionate about, really, or, like, evoking emotion about is, like, you know, the social justice warrior shit, which is a whole nother conversation. But he really, like, honed in on the point of, like, I really am, like, an artiste about this shit. Like, I really put a lot of work into this shit. And I can appreciate that, even though I don't really love his personality, but that really resonated with me.
It is. I mean, I whatever how you feel about Kyrie, he definitely have a love. He has a level of respect for the game that is very admirable. I fuck with Kyrie, but I definitely respect how he approaches the game. And I think that's, like, what's important in this situation, what's going on with the Wizards and Poole and Kuz, that, like, their just whole approach to the game just seems sideways. And it seems very entitled and seems very arrogant and obnoxious. And, like, I'm very critical in saying those words because I like Poole. I like his game. I think his game can evolve into something that's very unique. And I think he has a unique game in how he handles the ball, the way he sees the floor, the way he moves and transitions and pushes the ball. Even with Kuzma, I've been a big fan of Kuzma since he got into the league as a rookie with B.I. and D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle. And I think he has a very special, what they call it, D3 type of player game. He can do a lot of multiple things on the floor. He's a winner. He's won a championship. I would have loved to see them become, like, a duo that actually is making noise in the East, because the East is, even though you have your top four teams with Philly, Miami, Boston, and Milwaukee, there's below that, it's all up for grabs. You know, you can still make a lot of noise and maybe, like, get into a position where you're competing for, you know, Eastern Conference or Eastern quarterfinals or anything. Like, you just saw Atlanta Hawks go to, the semifinals two seasons ago. So, like, they're in positions to still make noise. I just would like to see them make a better approach because, honestly, I do like both of these players' games. I just don't like seeing them lose the way they're losing and lose the way how they're playing. Like, if you're going to lose, lose with fucking dignity.
Playing hard as fuck.
Don't lose on some bullshit. You know, don't lose because you just fucking trying to be fly and fresh and you don't care because you got your championship, you signed your check. Lose with some type of, like, passion. You know, you playing hard still. Like, I would respect that more than the way how they're playing and how they're losing.
I agree. Don't be passive about losing. Lose with the same flair you came into the arena with. You know what I'm saying?
Because you have to look at them in the mirror.
Like, play hard. You know what I'm saying? Dive on the floor, nigga. Like, be dramatic. If you're gonna be dramatic, like jump in the stands, nigga. Get, you know what I mean? Fight somebody, kick somebody, like yell at your teammate. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like they could have ran the table with the in-season tournament.
You love this in-season. What's going to start calling you in tournament Josh.
I feel like they could have ran the table, bro. They have championship experience. They can lead a team. They have another back. Like, I think they could have. Bro, call me Tommy. Call me in-season tournament Josh. I'm cool with that. I'm going to change my eyes.
You in tournament Josh.
Everything. Send me to Vegas.
Turn to end the tournament. Hey, bro, there's some bad bitches in here. You know the in-season tournament, dog. They be having bitches like this. They be out, dog. Hey, in-season tournament, dog.
And on that note, we're going to close out, guys. We're going to close out.
You know? Are you ready to go?